Awesome. Good evening and welcome to our meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California and our program, The Universe, Plastic Planet Called Earth. I'm Ann Clark, a member of the Commonwealth Club and chair of the Environment and Natural Resources member-led forum. A special welcome to our members and new members. If you have not yet become a member, we urge you to join us. Visit us at www.commonwealthclub.org and look for our magazine, the Commonwealth Club Magazine. In fact, the magazine is a wonderful reference because in the magazine it tells you all the ways you can access programs and listen to them on the radio, etc. So in the magazine you'll find directions about how to do that if you would like to listen to programs that have already been held or you're listening to one that's going on. Look in the magazine, but you have to join the Commonwealth Club in order to get a magazine. Some reminders for tonight. Our program is timed for a possible radio broadcast. Please make sure that all cell phones, PDAs, and other noise-making devices are off. We will do questions from the audience, and what I'll do is start in the back and work forward. Remember, it's questions. Questions, remember everyone? It's questions from the audience that our panel will respond to. We will now pause for one moment and then begin the program for our... Oh, one other thing I wanted to mention before that. Most of you have our green sheet from the Environmental and Natural Resources Forum. On the front page of this is programs that we are going to have and are just... They actually have been in the plans for a long time but haven't been published, all of them. So we have a program on April 28th. Reimagining Americans' Infrastructure. June 4th is I Never Knew There Were So Many Stars in the Sky, which is going to be a wonderful program of ninth graders from San Francisco high schools who go up to Camp Mather in the Sierras and spend a week learning about camping and the environment. The last one is June 17th in our series, the spring programs, Worldwide Challenges and the Environment, Difficult, Necessary Dialogues. And we will have Dr. Leslie Wong, who's president of San Francisco State University. San Francisco State University will be hosting a statewide hosting the California Higher Education Sustainability Conference, July 20th to 24th. And you actually are welcome to come to that conference. It's a conference for colleges, universities, community colleges, and state colleges. It's a wonderful conference. It has a really good reputation, and they will be hosting it here in San Francisco by San Francisco State University. So you should have a copy of this and also a look at some of the programs we've had this spring. So with that, what we're going to do is we're going to move on to our official program and start for the radio announcement in just a minute. You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Find us on the internet at commonwealthclub.org. I'm Ann Clark, a member of the Commonwealth Club and chair of the Environment and Natural Resources member-led forum. Our program tonight is The Universe's Plastic Planet Called Earth. It is my pleasure to introduce Betsy Rosenberg, who will be our moderator tonight. Betsy is creator and producer of the Green Front Progressive Radio Network, the HuffPro. She's with HuffPro Green Blogger and Fox, and is a Fox News commentator. And Betsy will introduce you to our panel.
Thank you, Ann. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Thanks for being here. When I did a blast to my email list and Facebook friends, I said, this panel is not for everyone. It's only for those of you who use plastic or perhaps detest the proliferation of plastic pollution. So everybody should be here. And I know many people who wanted to be here, so I'm really glad that we're recording this because, of course, this is an issue that pertains to all of us. We share our planet with plastic. The difference between the plastic and us, of course, is we won't be here forever. Our plastic will. Do all of you know that, by the way, that plastic doesn't biodegrade? Yes. So there's a lot to learn, and I've been doing green radio programs for, gosh, 18 years now. Started with Trash Talk on Earth Day 1997, if anyone remembers, back in those days on KCBS radio. And I went from garbage to global warming and Air America to the Internet, covering all issues on the green front lines. The Green Front was my most recent program. So I've been talking about plastic with experts. That's my show, is interviewing people who are expert in their green fields for years. So when Ann said, I've got a hot topic, let's do something on plastic, you'll be on the cutting edge, you know, I said, gosh, I wish this was a new problem to me, but I've been obsessed with trash for a long time. Most people are not, I understand. But those of you who are here get that we got a problem, and it's not just what's going into our landfill, but what's coming out of our tailpipes, and of course it's all about upcycling, downcycling, the whole life cycle of our for we humans, other species, and life cycle of products. So this is a really interesting discussion. I'm going to turn it over very quickly to the panel because I could talk trash all night. You don't need to hear that. We're going to hear from the experts. But my show's slogan was Sound Solutions for a Healthier Planet and People. When it was on Air America, the political angle was greening the red and blue states one show at a time. But it really is about solutions because and Americans, for the most part, are not as aware of the problems that we face because they are difficult, entrenched, endemic problems, and they're deep and they're wide and they're urgent. This is certainly one of them, but always focusing on solutions. And this panel here tonight is going to talk about solutions, a little bit about the problems, give you some statistics, give you a brief overview, and jump right into not only what we need to do, but what's being done. So I promise you, you'll leave inspired. And unlike Las Vegas, don't let what happens here stay here. Be ambassadors. Go out and greenify, if I forget to say that at the end. So now I'd like to introduce our esteemed panel. I have to first apologize. Anna Cummins with Five Gyres, the co-founder with her husband, Dr. Marcus Erickson, was not able to come at the last minute. Her young daughter got sick overnight, and Marcus is on the road because they do travel and talk about ocean plastic pollution in particular. So she was very apologetic, and we are going to reschedule. So watch the schedule for Commonwealth Club. We promise we'll get her back in the fall. But not to be outdone, we have two experts from Five Gyres who have stepped in, and they're from the local San Francisco office. So since we were going to fly Anna up from L.A., this is actually better from a carbon offset point of view. They probably walked over here, or at least didn't have far to drive. Carolyn Box, to my immediate right, is the Director of Environmental Programs for Five Gyres. And to her right, Blake Kopcho. He's the new campaign manager for Five Gyres. And Caroline's going to give you sort of the big picture, the scientific view. And then Blake is going to focus on the microbeads. That's a big problem about something very small that a lot of people are not aware of. And how am I doing? Okay. Okay, next is, I got it. Paul Tasner is someone who's recycled his career, which I like, because I recycled my career from Traffic and Weather Together to Trash and Waste Prevention Forever, and I'm trying to recycle my career from radio to television. So Paul went from, he'll tell you, working for someone in the manufacturing industry, I believe, and got tired of working for the man and said, there's got to be a better way as far as plastic packaging, and can't we all relate to that? And so he built a better mousetrap, and you're going to hear about that. He's the co-founder of Pulpworks, a very innovative design company solving a big problem. And last but definitely not least is Beth Terry, and she is the woman who literally wrote the book on plastic. In fact, it's called, and she does have some copies here if you're interested in buying them, although the new edition is coming out next month, just in time for Earth Day. Yeah. It's called Plastic Free, How I Kick the Plastic Habit and How You Can Too. And I believe you've gone to zero plastic, and I cannot wait to hear. Well, close. Okay, so close. Leave it to the Bay Area. There's a woman, you've probably seen her on television in Mill Valley, who's, I think, European descent. Leave it to the Europeans. They're ahead of us, just like someone in the audience who's going to hopefully introduce herself afterwards to really get, you know, that we can get to zero waste. So can't wait to hear your specific focus on plastic. So without further delay, I'm very excited to introduce Carolyn first, and we will open it up to questions at the end, so hold your questions. We promise we'll leave hopefully 10 minutes at least for that.
All right. Hi, everyone. Thank you for having Five Gyres join in on the conversation, and I'm sorry again that Anna is not here. But I'm excited to be here and speak with you about the issue. So again, I'm Carolyn Box, and I live here in San Francisco. I am the Director of Environmental Programs, and this means that I work with Dr. Marcus Erickson on planning basically our research goals and our citizen science programs for the organization. So I personally got involved through my passion for the issue and for our oceans, and I have been on 5 ocean expeditions and 2 of the Great Lakes expeditions. So I've been around the issue quite a bit, and it's something that is, you know, a clearly a bit large issue, but it's also an issue that we all have control over personally. So it's an issue that people can understand. Blake is also here, and he's our new campaign manager, and he'll talk about our microbead campaign. So tonight, I'm going to talk about I'm going to give you an overview of plastic pollution, how it's distributed around the world, and then we'll go into a few solutions. All right, so it's actually a pretty exciting time for plastic pollution. In the world of plastic pollution, these days, this is a cartoon that was published in December in the Sacramento Bee, showing details about our global estimate, our paper that was recently published. And this is exciting because more and more articles like this are getting picked up, and we see over and over in the media these types of titles. So while plastic pollution has become a global issue, the good news is that organizations that are represented in this room and large-scale organizations are taking charge and paying attention, and people around the world are taking action. Oops. So before I go into the details of our actual global estimation, I'm going to go through who 5Gyres is and what we do. So 5Gyres has a mission to engage people in design and policy solutions to end the global health crisis of plastic pollution. So we were started in 2009 by Anna and Marcus to actually go out and document where the plastic is and how much is out there. So there was a lot of attention being given to the North Pacific, and Anna and Marcus were determined to show that the issue is a global issue, and that's just what they did. So they organized a series of global expeditions. In total, we've done 16, including those 2 to the Great Lakes. We've been to all areas of the northern and southern hemisphere, and in all of the samples, except for 2, we have documented plastic pollution. So that's over 650 samples, and many of those, if not all of them, have been plastic positive. So our expeditions bring together experts in the field and ocean enthusiasts. We do our research aboard sailboats. This allows us to quickly get around and use less petroleum. And on those expeditions, we all work together to carry out the research, and then also we have interesting and inspiring conversations about the solutions. So it's about bringing people together and documenting the issue, but also making a noise about the issue. So our last expedition was to from across the North Atlantic, from Bermuda to Iceland. And on this expedition, we carried out research, which we do on all of our expeditions, documenting what's floating on the surface of the ocean. What we generally see out there is microplastics. So this is plastic material that's entering the ocean through storm drains and rivers, generally. It's making its way into the ocean and being broken down from sunlight and wave action. So what we always see in our samples is plastic bits that you cannot can't tell where it came from or where the source was, which makes the issue difficult. So this data is recently published by Marcus in a paper estimating the global distribution, and the research from all of our expeditions from 2009. Estimates that 269,000 tons and 5.25 trillion particles are out there. So this is just the estimating what's floating on the surface. So this is a map of all of the samples that were incorporated into the model that spit out this number. And you can see that there's a significant amount of let me start over. You can see that there's a, it's spread throughout the entire ocean. There's about half in the northern hemisphere, and there's quite a bit in the Indian Ocean. So what we're seeing here is that 92% of this material is microplastics, which is very interesting. So we're seeing the stuff that's broken down. And we're also seeing that we see find this material in ice cores and on the bottom of the ocean, and now we are confident that much of this material is actually sinking. So quickly, just to make this drive this point home, this is 700 pieces of plastic per person on Earth. So many of us probably know the impacts already of plastic pollution. So many species are impacted. We have entanglement and ingestion. And the longer plastic is at sea, the more contaminants attach to plastic, making it more toxic for animals that ingest. And naturally, as this moves up the chain, it becomes an issue, a human issue. So tonight we want to focus a bit on solutions. We'll hear from Beth Terry on what we can do personally. There's a lot that we can all do to reduce our single-use plastic footprint, which makes the issue very personal. But also, I think where we do focus a lot of our energy is higher up. What can companies do, and what can communities do to limit the amount of plastic that is in the community? And so now Blake is going to speak about the Plastic Microbead campaign.
Hello, everyone. Give me one second. Oops, I'm making a lot of noise. Okay. Here we go. Great.
Well, he's setting up. If anyone notices, I'm using a plastic cup. I know. I notice these things. I go to climate change energy conferences, and they've got the air conditioning blasting in a hotel room, and everyone's got their coats on. I didn't bring my cup. My bad. But what I will do, just to give you ideas, if any of you want them, I'll take this home and use it to give my dog water. I'll keep it in the car probably for about 10 times. So that's how I offset my eco guilt, just so you know. My husband says my plug-in Prius looks like a transfer station. I got all kinds of glasses and bottles rolling around in there.
All right. Good evening, everyone. Again, my name is Blake. I'm the new campaign manager with Five Gyres. I'm going to talk to you a little bit more about our campaign to ban microbeads in consumer care products. So we know that, let's see, where are we on the slides? There we go. We know that plastic is ubiquitous in the marine environment, but unfortunately, it's also ubiquitous in society. This is a pretty standard grocery store that you can walk into in hundreds of thousands of locations across the U.S., and that's what you're going to see. So this means that upstream solutions to plastic pollution are complex. And one aspect that's particularly challenging is that with most of these microplastics, it's impossible to identify the source. You know, this is a typical sample that we find in the ocean. It's an ambiguous piece of plastic floating in the middle of the sea. It's very difficult to trace this back and have an idea of where that individual piece of plastic actually came from. And what's really interesting about microbeads is we actually can trace them back directly to a specific product. And we find these throughout the oceans and waterways. Pretty much everywhere we look for plastic, we find microbeads. Because we can trace them back to specific products and identify the companies that are the major producers of these products, it allows us to drive solutions. And so our effort to ban plastic microbeads from consumer care products in California and across the United States is a great example of how Five Gyres uses science, education, and action to drive solutions to the global plastic crisis. And Carolyn talked a lot about our research in the oceans, but what really ignited the movement to ban microbeads and consumer care products was the research that we did in the Great Lakes. and that's what those are. We found high concentrations of microplastics, and in particular, plastic microbeads, near major cities across the Great Lakes. And armed with this research, we reached out to our grassroots network of supporters and urged them to sign petitions that were urging the largest cosmetic companies to remove plastic microbeads from their cosmetic products. And they listened. In fact, Unilever, Crest, Johnson & Johnson, The Body Shop, and L'Oreal have all pledged to phase out plastic microbeads from their cosmetic products, which is really exciting.
Soon?
Well, so that's that's the problem, is that not all of these companies have given a timeline, and there isn't really any way to hold them accountable. This is something that they've decided to do voluntarily. This is just an example of one of the petitions that we have going now. Okay. But back to the cosmetic companies. So because not all of them have decided to phase out products, we need to really level the playing field for companies that have decided to do the right thing. And so we took our research to lawmakers in California, Illinois, in New York, and educated them about the emerging global plastic crisis, and urged them to pass legislation that would mandate that companies remove microbeads from their consumer products. The good news is that legislators also listened to us. So here we are about a year after the first conversations that we've had with legislators, and over 18 states across the country now have either banned microbeads in consumer products or are considering legislation at the time. In California, Five Gyres, along with a coalition of leading environmental groups, have co-sponsored a bill with Assemblymember Richard Bloom in Santa Monica that will do that here in California. And this is actually the strongest bill in the entire country that we've written here in California. Unfortunately, the cosmetics industry has lobbied aggressively to water down microbead bans all across the country, similar to what they've done with plastic bag bans in California and across the country. They've created a loophole for biodegradable plastics to replace traditional polyethylene plastics, and biodegradable plastics behave very similarly to traditional plastics in the marine environment. These are plastics that have been designed to compost in industrial composting facilities, but if you were to take your compostable plastic cup and throw it in the ocean, it'll do the same thing as a normal plastic cup. So by writing these bills that allows for a loophole for compostable plastics to replace traditional plastics, you essentially nullify the effects of the bill. You know, these bills are designed for one purpose only, to eliminate plastics from our consumer care products, and if we don't accomplish that with the bill, then they don't really do anything. So just to wrap up really quickly, fortunately, because of how distribution models work, the strongest bill in the country will actually determine what happens and which products are used to replace polyethylene. Companies aren't going to ship different products to different states. So when we win here in California this year, then we can prevail over the behemoth that is the cosmetics industry and be one step closer to really stopping the flow of plastic into the oceans in the first place. Great, that's what I've got. We have an expedition coming up in a few weeks. How long is it? In a month or two?
It's three legs in June.
Across the Bahamas. We're really excited.
Can we come?
Yes, absolutely. So go to fivegyres.org and you can learn more about the work that we do, get involved with our campaign to ban the bead, and sign up for the expedition.
Great.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll clap at the end. Don't want to waste a second.
Sorry, I've got some props. Can you hear me? Yeah. I've got some props.
Props are good.
How's that?
I know you've got a big
voice. You hear me in
voice.
The back?
Use that voice.
Good. All right. All right.
Problem being so tall, huh?
I could do my Matthew McConaughey. So our business is called Pulp Works. We design and manufacture sustainable packaging for consumer products. We use waste, or trash, as Betsy likes to call it. We use waste to create these molded fiber packages. We use paper waste, and we use agricultural waste. That's our management team. By the way, I'm going to skip through a lot of the slides that dwell on the problem because my colleagues on the panel are so articulate about that, and I'd really like to spend more time on our solution rather than the problem. So I apologize if some of the slides go by quickly. Anyone can have the slide deck if they wish. Familiar pictures to everyone, sad and familiar pictures. One of them is Jardim Gramacho in Rio de Janeiro, the largest landfill on the planet. It's 247 football fields and 30 stories high, and it's topped out. This slide addresses the carbon dioxide equivalents created by the manufacture of polyvinyl chloride for packaging, 130 million pounds, more or less, per year. Incinerating our plastic packaging is also dreadful. I'm sure everyone here is painfully familiar with some of the issues and cancer-causing side effects of incinerating plastic packaging. There's even a psychological term for opening plastic packaging. It's called wrap rage. Which gets us to my first lighthearted moment. My wife came home from Bed Bath & Beyond with something that she thought was quite amusing. It was a tool to open blister packaging. They have tools for them, heavy-duty cutting tools. And here's one of them. Packed in a blister pack. It's brilliant. Oh,
what's wrong with the picture?
Here's another lighthearted look at a really serious problem. You might recognize it. Some of you may remember this from the action. It's a good way of driving the problem home in a lighthearted way.
His ex-wife is an eco-activist, Lori David, so he knows about this.
For all you radio listeners, Larry David is having a little meltdown opening a plastic pack.
He may have to melt it down. Now he's getting a screwdriver. Scissors didn't work.
I'm going to flip through. Time is too precious. And I think everyone gets the impression. Let's see. Dreadful numbers on plastic production. They keep rising. Packaging is a big part of plastic manufacturing. Okay, our solution. One of our solutions. We designed and filed a patent for a replacement for plastic blister packaging, and I brought an example of the problem and the solution. This is a typical plastic blister pack. It's a Clorox product packed in a polyvinyl chloride blister, and this is our solution to it. It's the same product, virtually the same package, but our blister is on the back, and our blister is a compostable waste paper blister. And there's really no reason to continue packaging things like this. For food and drug items, certainly, they need to be sealed up. You don't want other people handling those products. But for all the vast packages in all different categories, they don't have to be sealed up this way. There's a solution that we've developed that's perfectly adequate for it. So,
and talk about the disconnect. Clorox has Greenworks, green cleaning solution, yet it doesn't quite extend to their packaging.
Yeah. Other categories where our packaging is appropriate in office and cosmetic and home and electronic and more games, electronic. There's another view of our package for a local company, EO Products. They're in San Rafael. And some of the customers that we're working with currently and some of the ones that we'd like to be working with shortly. There's a package we did for Groupon. And so you see, our goal is really to replace unnecessary plastic packaging. It doesn't have to be a blister pack. Great if it is. We've got a solution. But we've got solutions for all kinds of different plastic packaging. This is for a Groupon hardware and software for Groupon for their new merchants. This is something that we designed for Bloom Energy, an alternative energy company in Sunnyvale. Leapfrog Toys, a tray for one of their electronic games. All of this is compostable, molded fiber packaging. Here's something for Burt's Bees, a tray. Here's something for T-Mobile. And that package is a beautiful, white, smooth, compostable package. It's made from the waste of a sugarcane plant called bagasse. And it's lovely. I mean, it's a long way from your grandmother's egg carton, which is, you know, what most people associate with molded packaging. And that's one that we're very proud of. We're not the first to come up with this. I fully admit that. But hopefully we'll be the last. It's a fully compostable replacement for the plastic polystyrene coffee cup lid. And there's like... And I didn't even plant her in the audience.
I did.
Bless your heart. This is made of bagasse, the same material that T-Mobile package is made out of. And it passed a lot of tests with some major distributors of coffee. There are billions. I mean, you can do the math in your head. There are billions of coffee cup lids going to landfills every day.
That were on the top of drinks that took maybe 5 minutes to consume, but they'll be in the landfill forever?
We're very proud to say that we're beginning, we've begun a relationship with the Mohawk Paper Company of New York. They're a 90-year-old privately held paper company that has decided to look into the kinds of packaging that we do as an extension of their business, and we're proud to partner with them. And just we've won a lot of awards, and we're very proud and grateful for those. And we've been covered in the press extensively, which is wonderful, too. And that helps attract more attention from customers and people. And I thank you.
Moving right along, we have Beth Terry in just a moment.
This is Ann Clark, and you're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California, and our program tonight is the universe's plastic planet called Earth. And you've heard from three of our speakers, Carolyn Box and Blake Kopcho and Paul Tasner, and you also heard from Betsy Rosenberg, and the person who's making those comments is with the speakers is Betsy Rosenberg, and she's our moderator tonight and a terrific moderator. We're moving on now to listen to Beth Terry. So here is Beth, and again, this is the Commonwealth Club of California, the universe's plastic planet called Earth.
Hi. I'm so happy to be here. I've been listening to these broadcasts for years, and I'm just so excited that this issue is getting media attention right now, and more people are becoming aware of it. I'm an accountant. That's what I love doing. I love numbers. I love analysis. I love figuring things out. I love managing other bookkeepers and telling them what they did wrong. Nah, that's not true. That last part's not really true. I like it when they do things right. I tell you this because I'm not a professional activist. 7 years ago, in 2007, I was just like the average American. I was going to my job, doing my thing, coming home. I didn't want to cook, so I lived on frozen microwavable meals in plastic packaging. I drank bottled water every time I went to the gym and would throw the bottles in the trash if there wasn't any recycling handy. And I pretty much bought whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted, without really thinking about where it came from or where it was going to go. And I didn't really have a lot of time. You know, convenience was really important to me. And then back in 2007, I had surgery, and I was stuck at home, and I had a lot of time on my hands. And I found myself browsing the internet, reading about the various environmental issues out there. And I considered myself an environmentalist because I gave money to Greenpeace. And I saw an inconvenient truth. But none of those things had really changed my personal actions. And I read an article about the plastic pollution problem in the ocean, which was something completely new that I hadn't heard about before. And I saw a photo that completely changed my life. This photo is of a dead albatross chick on Midway Island, which is thousands of miles from civilization, halfway between the United States and Japan. And because of the way the ocean currents move and the plastic that is accumulating in the ocean, plastic washes up on the beach constantly, and the mother birds fly out over the ocean to gather food for their chicks, and they mistake the plastic for food, and they bring it back, and they feed it to their babies, and the babies die with their bellies full of plastic. And I saw this image, and it impacted me like no other image ever had before. I could see things inside that chick, like bottle caps. Some of the pictures had lighters, toothbrushes. These were things that I was personally using every day. And I made the connection for the first time in my life between my personal actions and my impact on the planet. And I thought, something's got to change. And I knew I couldn't go out there and clean up the gyre myself, but I could make some changes at home. So I decided to see what it would be like to stop buying any new plastic. I didn't know if this would last for a month or a week, but I just thought I would try it. And I didn't know what my personal plastic footprint was, so I decided to start collecting my plastic waste and seeing how much I was generating. So I brought my plastic waste to show you. This is 1 year's worth of plastic from 2011, when I was still actually collecting it and tallying it, and of course putting it on a spreadsheet, because I'm an accountant and spreadsheets are my life. This is about 2% of what the average American generates in a year. And this is both the recyclable and the non-recyclable stuff. It's not just things that we would throw away in our trash. But when I first started, it took me several years to get down to this level. Let me skip past this and then I'll come back to it.
Just read that line, because that was
really, I will come back to it. Okay. This is the first week of collecting my plastic waste, because I had a lot of plastic in my house. And whereas I had decided I wasn't going to collect any, I wasn't going to accumulate any more, I was still using up what I had left. And this is the first 6 months. As you can see, my entire living room is full of plastic trash. And this is 1 year. So I started a blog called My Plastic Free Life because I wanted to track my progress and help other people reduce the plastic in their own lives. And I'm not here to try to convince everyone to reduce their plastic necessarily to that level, because it does take a lot of work and a lot of effort and a lot of research. But I want to make it easier for people to do that. Another thing that I learned as I was reading the article that night, and I'm going to back up a little bit now. Is that it's not just baby birds that are eating plastic, but we humans are just like those albatross when we eat or drink out of plastics, because we're consuming the chemicals that are contained in plastics and that can leach out. And there are a lot of chemicals that a lot of us have probably heard of, like bisphenol A and phthalates, which are endocrine disruptors. But the truth is that there are thousands of chemicals in plastics, potential chemicals in any plastic product, that we don't necessarily know about, because manufacturers are not required to disclose any of their proprietary formulas. And there have been studies on BPA-free plastics that have shown even more endocrine disrupting properties than plastics with BPA in them. And endocrine disruptors work at very, very tiny doses. So I'm showing a graph right now which shows you that at the lowest level, which is nothing, this particular chemical, BPA, has no effect. And at a high dose, it has, at a higher dose, it has no effect also. It's in between those doses where it mimics mimics a hormone in your body and actually has an effect. Because at the higher dose, the body doesn't see it as a chemical anymore. It just sees it as a toxin, and it wants to get rid of it. At a lower dose is where it's really dangerous. And this is the area that scientists and the health establishment need to be focusing on. So that's why I've decided not to eat or drink out of plastic if I can avoid it. So what are some things that I do? Well, I'm going to go through a few things here. On my website, My Plastic Free Life, I also have lots and lots and lots of solutions. And in my book, of course. And just to let you know, Betsy mentioned the book, but there is a new edition coming out in a couple of weeks, around April 14th or so. And it has all updated information and a brand new chapter and a foreword by Jack Johnson, which is exciting. So I'm not really pushing the original edition right now. But it is, although it's still very useful. So some of the things that I did initially right off the bat was just to bring my own bag with me, bring my own bottle, never leave the house without it. You have your watch and you have your keys and you have your reusable bottle and your reusable bag. And I carry a set of reusable utensils with me. When I go out for takeout, I carry a reusable container or to a restaurant for leftovers, and I even have a glass drinking straw that I prefer to plastic. Some other things are shopping in stores that have bulk bins where you can bring your own bags and containers and shop without any packaging at all, or shopping farmers markets without packaging. This is what the inside of my refrigerator looks like. It's all mason jars, glass, reusable things. And one of the things that's been so great about this is that I've gotten to be very creative. I've learned to make a lot of things myself. I make homemade chocolate syrup now instead of Hershey's in the squeeze bottle. It tastes really good. And when the ear pads on my headphones wore out, those things are plastic, so I learned how to crochet my own. And they look great. And they work great, too. Baking soda, they do, right? Yeah. Baking soda is an awesome deodorant. For me, it's better than any commercial deodorant I've ever purchased. And there are lots and lots of recipes for making your own products. And if you check out Etsy online, if you don't want to make something yourself, there's probably somebody else out there that will make it for you. Fixing things when they break, buying things used or refurbished. These are all things that I've tried. People ask me, do these personal actions make a difference? You're just one person. But I feel like our personal actions are magnified by the example that we set for other people. When they see me bringing my own bag to the store, it plants the idea in their head that this is something that maybe they could do too. So I definitely believe that personal actions are important. It's also important to get action on a systemic level, on a legislative level, on a business level, to support companies like Pulpworks that are doing the right thing and creating alternatives. But it's also really important for us to think about the choices that we're making every day and to make mindful choices. Thanks.
This is Ann Clark, and you're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California Radio and our program, The Universe's Plastic Planet Called Earth. And we have with us tonight Carolyn Box, Blake Kopcho, Paul Tasner, Beth Terry, and our moderator, Betsy Rosenberg. So we've come to that point in the in our program tonight for questions. So I'll come down in the aisle now and raise your hand if you have a question.
Gonna play Oprah.
Hi. I was just wondering, on a global scale, on an international relations scale, how can we make this a global issue for other countries, not just the U.S., and what role other countries play in this?
Well,
I'll answer it.
Go ahead.
All right.
Good question, by the way.
Yeah, it's a big question. So you're asking, how can we get other countries involved? I think that we can definitely build off of building partnerships and building off of the research that's already out there. So there's a lot of people out there, like Five Gyres, that's collecting information and trying to get it out to the world. So what we can do with that is build off making partnerships with other countries and other organizations out there. And Five Gyres participated in some recent discussions in D.C., and so those meetings, which brought together leaders of the issue from other countries, we need to have more meetings like that that would inspire discussions on a larger level.
I just want to add that, if we in this country, us, U.S., get our act together, then we can focus on it. Not that it's a bad thing to focus globally, but you'll find that most of the people who are in the zero waste movement, and we have someone in the audience who I hope will share what she's doing, are of European descent. I'm not saying anything about Americans' eco-IQ, but there's room for improvement, so I say let's get our act together and go outward. But nothing is bad, of course, but we should look in the mirror first as a country.
Yeah, and
we're world-class wasters.
Yeah, and I would agree that, you know, we're setting a lot of times, you know, the movement to use single use, that is something that started here in the States and has been moving around the world. So we visit a lot of different island communities, and just now recently we're now seeing these single-use items show up on these islands where there's not really options, you know, for disposable. So it's an issue that we need to think about in a lot of different ways. But in terms of disposal of that, that's a big deal.
That answer was by Carolyn Box, and before her it was Betsy Rosenberg. And we have another question.
Yeah, hi. I'm holding up my question.
The plastic
I got it
cup.
Here at the Commonwealth Club. Yeah. What does it mean when there's a triangle and a number 7 in it? Is this plastic compostable?
Is it really a 7?
Yeah. So yeah. I believe that is a compostable plastic. So the numbering system is 1 through 6, and 7 is everything else. So the way the plastics are numbered, there are thousands and thousands of different types of plastic. The numbers 1 through 6 are just the most, the plastics that end up in the recycling system the most. The idea was to make it easier for recyclers to tell one plastic from another. And 7 is everything else. And so biodegradable compostable plastic ends up with a 7, but also polycarbonate, which has BPA in it, ends up with a 7 also. So the numbers don't really tell you a lot. You just need to know what type of plastic it is.
And most people don't bother looking, so yeah. Thanks for looking. At least this is made from some kind of eco-friendly.
Well, it's made from plants, and the city of San Francisco will take that back and put it in their composting system. But just because something is theoretically compostable doesn't necessarily mean that it breaks down all the way. And so San Francisco's composters have actually found that things don't necessarily break down all the way when they go through the cycle, and then that stuff ends up in the landfill anyway.
That answer was from Beth Terry, and before her again, it was Betsy Rosenberg.
Do you think there's any potential for a campaign to demand recyclable packaging? I recently bought a ceiling lamp, and by the time I broke down the plastic forms, it came in, I had 3 large bags, and I had beads all over my apartment. I'm still cleaning them up. Mm. And I'm wondering, if I had put in the comments on my order, which was an online order, that I did not want this lamp unless it could be sent to me in recyclable container. Do you think there's any potential for a campaign of that sort?
There one thing that can be done, it's rather bold, but it sounds like many of you are indeed bold. But when you buy something in a plastic blister pack, this is the easiest because it's so visible. She's talking about something that was packed in a box and surprised her when she took it out. But if you buy something that's packed in unnecessary, wasteful plastic, take it up to the store manager. Take out the item that I'm sure you don't want the entire package. You just want the lovely bleach pen inside. Take it up, open it up, take out what you want, and give the package back to the store manager and say, I don't have a way to recycle this. You take care of it. Better yet, why don't you talk to the manufacturer and tell them we don't want it this way? Granted, that's a rather bold statement, but you know, if millions of people did that with their plastic packaging, people would start to take notice.
There's a whole producer manufacturing, producer responsibility right. movement yeah. going on for years. And by the way, there's a zero waste conference, if any of you guys are really into this, coming up, I believe, in May in Southern California. So check that out.
So again, our answer is from Paul Tashner and Betsy Rosenberg, and we do have another question.
Thank you for the excellent panel. We could also send the packaging back to the manufacturer in bulk. Someone could collect it. We could send it. So my question is, how is this plastic getting into the ocean exactly? Is it going down storm drains? And if it is, can we somehow put grates on the storm drains and then pick up the plastic that way?
Great question.
All right.
Carolyn?
So that's a good question.
And this is Carolyn Box.
So it's estimated that 80% of plastic that's in the ocean is coming from on land. And so the way it's getting into the ocean is through, like you said, streams, creeks, rivers, and storm drains. And actually, the Bay Area is a pretty progressive area, as we know. But in terms of trash, we have a region-wide permit that is requiring cities and counties to reduce what's actually going down their storm drains and down their rivers by 2024 to zero, so they're required to make these huge reductions. And so one of the big steps in doing that is creating these catchment basins at the end of the pipe. But basically that is, giving a piece of equipment or putting a piece of equipment and sort of capturing the issue right before it goes into the ocean. So yes, potentially that could work in many areas, but the, Five Gyres and, what we're all sitting up here to sort of propose is that it needs to, the issue, in order to solve the issue, we need to look way upstream and think about the products like that lamp that you were saying. You need to think about that product and can this, it come in a box that's full of, packaged in a way that we can recycle all that. Is the product itself, what's going to happen to that when it dies? So we need to really think about that. But there's definitely a movement for looking at that as well.
Can I add something really quick? Oh, sure.
Let's see. Let's take Beth Terry first and then Blake.
About that lamp and about that issue, I just want to say that I have often had success writing to companies beforehand, before placing an order, and asking them not to package my package in plastic. And a lot of times they'll do it. Now, it's usually a smaller company. It's usually a smaller seller that's likely to do that. But by doing that, then I'm also supporting small businesses and not huge companies like Amazon.
And Blake? Blake?
I think the microbead issue is a really good example of this problem because microbeads are so small that they're actually not caught when they go through the wastewater treatment facility. And if you have tertiary treatment, then they actually will capture the microbeads. But the reason that Five Gyres is advocating for design solutions and policy solutions is because if you want to spend money on refurbishing wastewater facilities across the state that are going to be able to capture the problem, you're then putting the burden of the problem on the taxpayer to upgrade the wastewater treatment facility. But it shouldn't be up to us to deal with a problem that begins with the corporations themselves, which is why forcing them to create a product that eliminates the problem in the first place is the avenue that we've pursued with microbeads.
This is Ann Clark, and you're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California and our program, The Universe's Plastic Planet Called Earth. Unfortunately, we've come to the point in our program when we only have time for one more question. All right, I will go all the way back in the audience since she's been so patient, but she has to come really quick so we can get her on the microphone.
I just wanted to know the statistics for consumer plastic. Has it gone up or down with the introduction of new green plastics like compostable plastics and, the additional awareness of what plastic can do to the environment? So are we consuming less now that that is available or are we consuming more?
Yeah. Go ahead. No.
I don't have proof of this, but it seems to me we're consuming more. I mean, I just see more and more and more products that weren't packaged in plastic that are packaged in plastic now. And we just, as consumers, as customers, we have to speak up if we don't want this.
You know, many companies think switching from a toxic plastic to a less toxic plastic is their way of being responsible citizens. Mm-hmm. We've encountered this many times in the field. So I too think that the numbers have gone up, up, up.
Again, our answers were Paul Tassner and Beth Terry. And it is kind of sad that we don't have time, and I wish we did, because I can see there are lots more questions in the audience, and we could probably spend a lot more time discussing the issues that have been brought up tonight by our wonderful panel, and perhaps we can do that at another time. But I want to thank the audience. You've been a great audience, and I really appreciate the questions that you did ask. And Betsy would like to sum up from her point of view.
I've got 1 minute. I'll talk fast. First of all, I just want to thank Ann Clark for suggesting this topic. Obviously, it is one that needs to be explored, and we will take it up again, hopefully, this fall at the Commonwealth Club. I just got back from a trip back east. I guess I don't get out much, but I was reminded once again how environmentally unfriendly the skies are. You know, I asked for tea, and not only did they bring a cup, paper cup, but they put the tea bag in a plastic cup, and then they bring the plastic stirrer, and then coffee, and coffee always comes with cream and sugar whether you want it or not. And I was drinking a lot of tea early flight. I kept handing the plastic cup back each time she brought me more tea. I said, I don't need the cup. I can put it, you know, on the tea wrapper. I can put it in my lunchbox. You know, it just drives me crazy. And they still look at you like you're crazy. So apparently there aren't enough of us out there. And I also was at a conference in Washington, D.C. that wasn't green. I'm used to going to green conferences where the badges, the credential holders are a little more eco-friendly somehow. Oh, my gosh, Paul, you've got to work on this. I was at a conference where the credential, the plastic holder, I meant to bring it. Sorry, I didn't. It was almost as big as a milk carton. And I'm not exaggerating. Thick plastic for my name for 3 days. And I was so intent on returning it and saying something and then, of course, forgot. So that's something we need to work on, because think about all the conferences out there. And the bottom line is convenience clashes with conservation, and we're really bad about that in this country, and we just have to start going back in the other direction. So if I can just urge you all to visit the websites of these wonderful panelists. There's a woman in the audience, Vipka, who's starting a Tupperware party for plastic containers, glass jars. She's from Europe. And there's some fellow activists in the audience. I wish we could have time to introduce them all. If I can just, a quick plug for if you're interested in any environmental topic, there's hundreds of shows archived on my website, thegreenfront.com. It's not me. It's experts in their fields, including plastic, free to anybody. Podcasts, you can listen to them anytime you want. And my daughter somehow turned out green, works for Teens Turning Green, and they have all kinds of information on products and, you know, the list of the Dirty Dozen, the things you don't want to buy, and information on plastic, as well as just, you know, how to eat green. And so thank you for your attention. Thanks for being here. As I said at the beginning, please don't keep this panel a secret. It really applies to everybody. And it's an interest of yours, maybe a profession, but we need to get everybody else on board, or we won't be able to make that eco-U-turn soon enough. So please, and it's really important to vote green too. Thanks.
A big thank you again to our speakers, Carolyn Box, Blake Kopcho, Paul Tassner, Beth Terry, and our moderator, Betsy Rosenberg. We really appreciate all of you coming tonight and being with us. So a big thanks for our audience, as I mentioned before tonight, and our radio and internet audiences. Look for all the Commonwealth Club programs at www.commonwealthclub.org and check out our radio, video, and free streaming podcasts. I wanted to mention just a couple of programs that are coming up that I mentioned to you early on the green sheet. April 28th will be Reimagining America's Infrastructure, co-sponsored by Orion Magazine. On May 6th, we will have the San Francisco Green Film Festival. So this will be a preview of this year's film festival, which will be May 28th through June 4th. And on May 13th, we will have an update on California's water and drought with Felicia Marcus, who's chair of the State Water Resources Control Board. So we have a good programs for you to come to, and we hope to see you at them. And then, as I mentioned also, there is that wonderful one about seeing stars on June 4th. for the San Francisco High School students, and Dr. Leslie Wong on June 17th talking about the changes that we need and the challenges that we need through not only our state university colleges, but through the conferences that they have. Again, I want to thank the people who are here and were so patient, and we will really wish we could have gotten to all of the questions. I am Ann Clark, Chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Member-Led Forum. This meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, celebrating more than 112 years of enlightened discussion in the know, is adjourned.